Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 elections in uncharted territory.
It should not be the case that anyone who stood in line to vote and honestly believes that they are a proper eligible voter should walk away from the polling place.
This election day, after record-breaking early voting, Nancy Abudu with the Southern Poverty Law Center says voters have options if they run into problems at the polls. If you're in line when the polls close, they have to let you in. If your name's not on the voter rolls, Abudu says some states stopped updating their voter pages a few days earlier, and you can ask for a printed-out supplemental voter sheet or, last resort, cast a provisional ballot.
The hotline number is 866-OUR-VOTE. We are directing all calls and complaints that we receive to that election protection hotline. We guarantee that someone will respond.
Experts say the vast majority of voters will cast their ballots safely today, despite violent threats online, some pre-election vandalism, and isolated incidents of voter intimidation tactics, like armed onlookers outside the polls, pepper spray, and some Trump supporters blocking traffic. Dan Vallone, with the group More in Common, says their polling indicates very few people want to see political violence.
If somebody is concerned because of what they're seeing on social media or in the news, we can acknowledge the authenticity of those concerns and then talk about how many Americans are committed to peace.
Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube are taking steps to prevent misinformation from being spread on their platforms, especially if a candidate tries to call the election before all votes are counted. President Donald Trump has privately told aides he would declare victory before that happens. Local election leaders have been working around the clock for months to ensure the massive number of mail-in ballots are all accounted for. Vallone says just 41% of Americans believe the federal government can keep the election secure, but 68% have confidence in their local officials.
Most Americans trust that at the local level, we're going to get this election right, that our system has the capacity to deliver a legitimate result, and that our democracy has handled challenges before and that we're going to do it again this year.
In addition to verbal attacks, the Trump campaign has been waging a legal campaign against mail-in ballots. Yesterday, Trump told reporters his lawyers will jump in with new legal challenges as soon as polls close. Civil rights and good government groups will continue defending voting access. Kristen Clark is with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law.
To the extent that we encounter attempts to disenfranchise voters and reject or disqualify absentee ballots after the election, we are fully prepared to mount emergency litigation.
A federal judge agreed with her group, as well as a Texas state court, and rejected a Republican bid to invalidate more than 125,000 ballots cast at drive-through locations in Harris County, which includes Houston. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks to Mary Sherman with Ohio News Connection, and thanks for listening.
This is KHOI 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames, and surrounding areas.
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Mike Metz, your host for this hour, along with engineer Mike Murphy and Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana. By now, you most likely know where you're going to vote, but just in case you still need to find out where to vote, the easiest place is to go online to get the information you need, and that's vote.org. That's vote.org. If you are not registered to vote, you can register at the polling place. When you go to vote, and you have to check to find out what you need. So there are many sources online for this. For instance, you can go to iwillvote.com. Even if you are already registered, you will be required to provide an approved form of ID before casting a regular ballot. Approved forms of ID include an Iowa driver's license or a non-operation ID, U.S. passport, tribal ID card or document, U.S. military or veteran ID, or an Iowa voter ID card. If you are registered at the polls on Election Day, you must provide a current and valid photo ID. Approved forms of identification for Election Day registrants include all of the items listed above, except the Iowa voter ID card. Additional accepted forms of identification are an out-of-state driver's license or non-operator ID, employer-issued ID or student ID issued by an Iowa high school or college. If your address has changed or if you register at the polls on election day, you will be required to provide a proof of residence. If your current address is on your current valid ID, then that may also serve as proof of residence. Other proof of residence documents must include your name, address, and be current within 45 days of presentation. These documents, except an ID, may be in electronic format, such as a cell phone or tablet. Additional approved proof of resident documents are residential lease, utility bill, but not including your cell phone bill, bank statement, paycheck, government check, or other government document or property tax statement, current within 45 days of the final payment. If you are unable to provide an approved form of identification or are unable to prove residence if required, you may have your identity residence attested to by another registered voter in the precinct or cast a provisional ballot and can provide ID up to until 12 p.m. noon on Monday after Election Day. KHOI will begin providing two updates per hour on election starting this evening at 6:15 p.m., again at 6:45, 7:15, and 7:45. Then at 8 p.m., we will begin airing continuous national coverage of the election until at least 11 p.m. Let's take a little music break, Michael.
They come to America. to thee, sweet land of liberty, of the I sing, of the I sing.
If you're just joining us, I'm Mike Metz, your host for today, and thank you, Neil Diamond, for that inspirational fire-up music for voting day today. Our monthly Story County Board of Health update is from Dr. Molly Lee. She's the Associate Director of the Center for Food Security and Public Health at Iowa State University, the College of Veterinary Medicine. Good morning, Molly. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me.
I was wondering if you could give our listeners, our KHOI listeners, an update on Story County's COVID-19 cases.
Of course. So as many might have heard in the news already, our cases in Story County are unfortunately starting to increase again. So we've had several days over the last few days with over 30, 40, 50 positive cases, which is a little bit of a jump up from before. If you remember my update from last month, we were around 15 positives a day. So that means our county's 14-day rolling positivity rate, or kind of that average of the last 2 weeks, how many positives we've had, which we use that rolling number to just kind of smooth it out, is 10.3% today. And again, last month when you heard from me, it was just under 7%. So we are getting an increase in cases. About three quarters of these positives are in the 18 to 40-year-old age group, which is, of course, our largest population group here in our county. And then at our public schools, we have had positives at most of our school districts within Story County, but cases do remain low at the public schools at this time. Our absentee rates are generally less than 3% for those districts that publish the case positivity data. And of course, the positive cases at our schools work closely with our local public health department on isolation, contact tracing, and quarantine procedures.
Molly, I was going to ask, do you think the weather change had a little bit to do with that? You know, it was cold for a while and now it's warming up again. And of course, that puts stress on a lot of folks.
Yeah, there is a lot that plays into it, but the cold weather, I think, definitely doesn't help, especially because people tend to spend more time indoors in close contact with one another. And so you're right, it is an additional stress on the system as well as putting people in closer contact with one another.
And if I could just ask you to, again, define or explain to our listeners the proper interpretation of positivity rate.
Yeah, so it is the positivity rate. There's a couple different values I gave you. So one of those was that 14-day rolling positivity rate. So that's the number of positive tests that our county is seeing from all the different testing that is reported to us from the different healthcare providers, the Test Iowa Clinic, and so on. And so that means the number of positives compared with the number of total tests put into an average to kind of smooth that out.
Okay. Because the reason I ask is there are some folks that sometimes get that a little bit confused when you're working with numbers, it's not always clear for some folks. So thank you for that explanation. Now,
sure.
I'd interrupted you. I'm sorry. But if you want to continue with what you were starting to say, go ahead.
Yeah, that's okay. Anything I can do to clarify, please feel free to interrupt. So I was going to mention Iowa State data as well. So they're, of course, a significant contributor to our county. Their 10-day rolling positivity rate, so they again use that rolling rate, but a 10-day instead of a 14-day, and theirs is currently at 7%, which is also an increase. That's the first time we've seen it greater than 5% in a couple months. So that's kind of what our county looks like. We're also seeing a sharp increase in cases in Iowa overall. While Story County is and has been doing relatively well compared to the state as a whole thus far in the pandemic, we've kind of lagged a little bit behind. And like we just talked about with the temperatures getting colder, holidays coming up, folks having the potential to travel and socialize with friends and family in other parts of the state, we are likely to see our numbers within our county increase as well.
Sure. And I was wondering if you could just review briefly some of the behaviors maybe we should take during these upcoming social gatherings, especially with family. I know some of us have decided it's probably better not to get together this year.
Yeah, I sure can. So like what you said, some of us have decided it's better not to get together. And there's a lot of different factors that weigh into that, how big your kind of pod or your circle normally is, and if that includes the people you'll be getting together with in the holidays, or if there's new people that you want to visit. We recognize not everybody will be staying away. You know, that's just not feasible for some folks. And so we wanted to provide a little bit of advice for the best things to consider if you do see friends and family over the holidays. So the number one thing I would like to discuss is kind of those logistics of the gathering. So I do want to emphasize that since the weather's getting colder and we'll be indoors, that distance alone, although it's important, can't protect you alone from the coronavirus. So if you're indoors, you want to ensure that you have good ventilation. You want to take a look at the duration of your gathering. Try to minimize it if possible. You know, maybe gather just for the meal indoors and then spend some time outdoors, or spread out your interactions with different people.
Some very good tips to keep in mind, that's for sure. And, you know, I like to use the word physical distance instead of social distance, because we get together socially in many different ways. So, but definitely watch your proximity, especially ventilation situations, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what if you or your family members have already had COVID-19? Are there some things to keep in mind there?
Yeah. So a few important things. If you are have been diagnosed with COVID-19 or anyone in your household, and you really want to make sure that you've met that criteria from the CDC for when it's safe to be around others. And so if you have symptoms of COVID-19, if you haven't finished your quarantine or your isolation period as directed by the contact tracers who will be working with you specific to your case, or if you may have been exposed to someone with COVID-19 in the last 14 days, we really don't recommend that you attend any holiday gatherings due to risk of exposing other people. But recovered people really should be treated like any other person. They don't have an, you know, immunity passport. While it's generally thought to be true that people who have been infected and recovered do not usually spread virus, everyone's immunity is different. So still take precautions.
Okay, thank you on that. Natural fiber masks that are reusable, we've been told that you can wash these with soap and water and dry properly, and you should always have extra masks, of course, available. But one question that has come up, are the PM2.5 inserts, the mask inserts, do you know if those are reusable, washable, or is that something that should be discarded after use?
Gosh, that's a good question. In general, what the CDC recommends is, you know, a double layer of thin, finely woven cloth masks. So those inserts, those filters, they may provide an additional layer of protection. It would really depend on the particular insert, and I'm sorry, I can't answer that question about if they're reusable or not.
That's fine. Thank you. Yeah.
But yeah, make sure that you have that clean mask and follow that CDC guidance for having it be a good fit on your face. That's
and
really important.
I would add that if it comes in a package, often the package has some instructions and uses how
yes.
to go about using them properly. To our listeners, if you are just joining us, we are speaking with Dr. Molly Lee from Story County Board of Health. Molly, are there any final thoughts you'd like to share with our KHOI listeners?
Yeah, just keep those four Cyclones Care campaign points in mind. So wear face covering, practice that physical distancing, wash or sanitize your hands often, and stay home when ill. And the sooner we get this, everybody on board following these practices, the less likely we're to have even further increase in cases in our community and keep our community healthy.
Thank you, Molly. That was Dr. Molly Lee from the Story County Board of Health. And if you are just joining us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Radio. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, and I'm just looking over at Mike Murphy, our engineer, and it's like we've just reached out, touched the monolith, and we now have all this great knowledge of what to do for the COVID-19. And that's a great introduction for our next guest, Steve Sullivan, Director of Marketing and Community Relations at Mary Greeley Medical Center. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
How are things going with you this morning?
Oh, well, they're going just fine. Thank you very much. Nice to be with you again.
I was wondering if you could share with our KHOI listeners the current number of patients. Is the hospital seeing any effects of a spike?
Yes, we are actually. Over the past several weeks, we were seeing fairly consistent numbers, under 10 patients a day. But over the past week or so, we've seen those numbers go up. And yesterday at one point, we had 16 COVID-19 patients. That's, I believe, is the highest number we've had at any given time during the entire pandemic. Now, by the end of the day, it changes every day, and it changes during the course of the day. That number had gone down by the end of the day. At present, as of this very moment, we have, I believe, 13. The majority of our patients, and this has been fairly consistent, the majority of the COVID-19 patients that we are treating have been on the medical floor. There's always some in the ICCU, sometimes on vent, most of the time not, but the majority of them are on a medical floor at the hospital, and it's a designated floor for COVID-19 patients and has a series of special processes and precautions that are taken.
Steve, where are these patients from? Are they here centrally or other places?
Well, keep in mind we serve a significant swath of central Iowa. Our primary market is about six counties, and then we spread out from there. The majority of the COVID patients we have now are from Story County, but maybe a little over half, and the rest are from other areas, Boone, Marshall, Greene, Hamilton, those areas. And most of them are in the 50-plus age range.
Okay, so that's 50-plus is one of the more vulnerable populations, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, an older population, and I'm in that age range, so I hesitate to say older population, but yeah, so it's mostly that 50 to 60 and higher. So, but I think something important to keep in mind, especially following up on the comments of your previous guest, we're seeing a lot of testing, of course, through Test Iowa and other avenues. There is no consistent trend in the positivity rate as far as age groups. We're seeing it across the gamut there in terms of ages, whether it's somebody who would be considered a pediatric patient, should they be at the hospital, up to 80, 90 years old. So it's really no age group is immune from testing positive for the virus.
So what you're saying, in effect, is that although certain populations and age groups may be a little more susceptible, it depends on the individual, their genetic makeup, and what their health status is when they are exposed to the COVID-19 virus.
Right. Comorbidities do play a role.
Is there any concern currently with numbers of beds, the availability of beds, or concerns about what happens if we increase the exposure?
Sure. And those, I don't want to make it sound like it's suddenly a concern, because it's always a concern. We're always reviewing what are the trends, what are we seeing out there, what do we have to prepare for. Our bed situation is fine. The hospital is busy, but we're traditionally busy this time of year anyway. So the hospital is definitely busy. We are seeing an uptick in the number of COVID patients, but we have beds. Now, there are hospitals in our area, in that Region 1 area, that are seeing a lot of tightening on their bed situations. Mercy down in Des Moines, for example. University of Iowa in Region 5 is seeing beds tighten up. Smaller hospitals, Fort Dodge, Trinity in Region 3 is tightening up. And that's both COVID and, keep in mind when we're saying the beds are tightening up, it's not just COVID.
Sure.
The COVID numbers are going up, but we've got people being treated for other things at the same time, which is causing some concerns with those other organizations. So when we see that happening, that can have a ripple effect.
Sure.
So we're always preparing for these situations, and maybe right now that preparation or the thinking behind the preparation is a bit heightened because what we see happening at other facilities.
Okay. So is Mary Greeley in a position where, if needed, they could accept a few other patients from the outside the area?
Sure.
Okay. So you're working as normal. You're working with other facilities to accommodate the need at the time.
We're working with our Region 1 representatives, so there's communication within the Region 1 about what's happening, and that's why the regions were set up. So if people, if we needed something, we can reach out to our Region 1 partners and vice versa.
Okay.
So, yeah, we're keeping an eye on everything and all possibilities.
So how is the how's the PPE supply? Do you have concerns, or are you in fairly good shape?
We're feeling okay about that right now. It's been a concern since day one. So we're always watching. We're always making adjustments where we have to. Right now, we seem to be in decent shape. But going back to what I was saying before, with the possibility of increasing numbers, especially as the weather gets colder and we start getting a little bit more shut in with the season, where are we at and what should we be anticipating? So we'll be, we're always looking at it.
Okay. A question of finances. How is the hospital doing these days? If you could explain maybe in general the situation and speculate on the whys behind that.
Well, keep in mind that earlier this year, for a good stretch of time, we had to suspend surgery, except for emergent surgeries. So elective surgeries just didn't happen for a significant stretch of time. And that placed a financial burden on every hospital, of course. But yeah, we faced a financial impact from that. Then you couple that with the need to start spending on stocking up supplies like PPE. So there are layers to it. So fewer people at the hospital. So having to make adjustments for staff. A lot of hospitals did significant, you know, pay freezes and hiring freezes. We did some of that. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a lot of that coming back here as things pick up. And, you know, we've been able to do surgeries for several months now. So we did get some help from the federal government, some of which will have to be paid back in some way over a period of time. But we are, you know, we took, like any healthcare organization, like any business in any form, you know, we took a hit. But I think we have some really smart people here who run this place. And smart financially too.
Sure.
And I think they made some very wise decisions, painful, but smart. So, you know, we're still feeling the impact, but I think we've weathered it in a positive way. And again, we're seeing some of those pay cuts that and salary and raise freezes, for example, being reinstated. And a lot of organizations are starting to do that. So we've been able to do that here. We'll be able to do that before the end of the year.
So what I'm hearing, what
it's
I'm
encouraging.
Hearing, yeah. What? Yes. What I'm hearing from you then is, you know, this is a something that didn't foresee, but it sounds like you've been able to roll with the flow, as you say, and adapt pretty well to the situation.
Yeah. And we've had to take measures to weather it and. But it's working.
Sure.
It's working, and we're getting through it.
Very good.
All for the benefit, ultimately, of the people in the beds here.
Right. If somebody wanted to get tested, what's the best way to get tested if you are worried about being exposed to COVID-19?
Well, I'm glad you asked this. Test Iowa. We have a Test Iowa site, as everyone knows, I believe, out of the Research Park. They're very busy. It's really picked up there. Right now they're looking at a 13.6 positivity rate coming out of that Test Iowa site. So, so the volumes of people wanting testing are up. So if you are thinking about getting tested through Test Iowa, please keep in mind you have to get an appointment. You can't take the assessment online and then drive up. It's just too busy right now. We're also having to make some accommodations for the weather, when it's colder. So if you do test Iowa is your best bet, you keep in mind the schedule is very tight. You need to make an appointment and you need to keep that appointment.
Is there a number to go ahead and contact, or do you do that through your physician? How does one go about doing that?
You have to go to the Test Iowa site, testiowa.com, and take the online assessment.
Okay.
Then if you qualify for a test, you go to, you'll want to pick the testing site. You have to go to additional options. So you click additional options, then click local clinics. And eventually you'll find the Story County Test Iowa. Then to schedule an appointment, you have to call the Story County Test Iowa clinic number, which is 800-866-3492.
Once again.
800-866-3492. That is to schedule an appointment after you've qualified for the test. Again, things are busy out there. They're going to get busier. We're anticipating that some Iowa State students will be looking to get tested there before they head home when Thanksgiving approaches. The university has testing processes in place for students as well. The other bet is to contact your primary healthcare provider if you feel you have symptoms. McFarland has some criteria that they have set up. So, for example, so if you're having symptoms, you can always reach out that way.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. Are there any final thoughts before we close out this discussion?
No, I think your previous guest, the doctor, what she was conveying is very important. There was recently a 60 Minutes segment where they interviewed people who were developing the vaccines, and they asked a bunch of them, what's most important to you right now, a mask or a vaccine? Every one of them said a mask.
Great.
Because the efficacy of a mask is proven. The vaccine is going to take a little bit to get here. So wearing that mask is hugely important. And, you know, taking precautions. And there's all sorts of stuff out on the internet about how to take precautions during holiday gatherings and shopping and being closed up in the house and everything else. So it's going to be a very stressful time over the next few months. So we hope everybody gets through it. And we are here to help those who need it.
Okay. Thank you, Steve.
And get a flu shot if you haven't already.
Yes. Good news. Good advice. Because that will help in any effect.
The good news is we haven't seen flu activity is really minimal right now. So we haven't seen a lot of that. So I think a lot of people are really taking the getting that flu vaccine very seriously.
Very seriously. Thank you, Steve. Steve Sullivan.
Thank you.
Steve Sullivan, Director of Marketing and Community Relations at Mary Greeley Medical Center. We're going to take a music break here. And thank you, Buffy St. Marie. You've Got to Run, or known as Spirit of the Wind. And that's for Native American Month, and to get us our blood stirring and get out and take advantage of the fact that we've got to all run, take a chance. Right now, we're going to welcome Susan Guiasta, Ames Public Relations Officer, along with Mark Lambert, attorney for the City of Ames. Good morning to you both. Mark, you are muted.
Yep, there we go.
Good to be here.
Thank you. It's great to see you. The sun's shining through your windows, I see, so that's great. I was wondering, Susan, do you have anything before I ask questions about the mask mandate?
Absolutely. I do have a couple of things to announce, as you've been talking about all morning. I'm sure it's Election Day. And just a reminder that this is the first year that you can ride Cyride fare-free all day to get yourself to a polling place.
Great.
The Transit Board of Directors wanted to increase voter turnout and voted at their last meeting to make Election Day a fare-free day, both for Cyride and for the Dial-A-Ride services that they offer. So transportation should not be a problem for everybody today. It looks like a beautiful day. Maybe get out for a walk or take the bus and walk, a combination. But, of course, we encourage everybody to get out to vote.
And if they are standing in line, it'll be a nice day, but maybe they need to take a beverage or something, because I know the lines were long yesterday, and I'm sure they will be today.
And stay physically distanced, of course. We want everybody to stay safe as they vote. Bring your mask. Wash your hands frequently. And don't vote if you're sick. I mean, I'm sorry, but that just isn't going to be something that you're going to want to do today if you're running a fever or if you're sick.
Very good
advice. Thank you. The other thing I wanted to remind people is that the City of Ames will kick off its budget process on Thursday at 7 p.m. with a Zoom town hall budget meeting. The town hall budget meeting is an annual event that it's the first opportunity for public input to provide some direction to city staff as we work on the budget and we bring it to City Council. It's not the only opportunity, but this is the first year we are doing this meeting via Zoom. So it'll be interesting to find out what kind of participation we could get. We might get more participation or less. But if you can't make that Zoom meeting, just remember there are other ways to participate in the budgeting process, which continues throughout the winter and kind of wraps up in February. So it's coming up.
So that's the first public opportunity to voice your opinion on what you want to see done with the city budget this year.
Yeah, our finance director starts the meeting by giving a really, a big overview of how revenue comes in, how expenses go out. It's a really good primer if you don't have a lot of experience on city budgeting. He does a really nice job of explaining property taxes and other revenue sources. It's not a long presentation, but it's enough to give you the sense of how the process works. And then it pretty much is open for public input. So we'll have Dwayne. I'll bring Dwayne with me this week at Friday so he can talk about how it went and additional opportunities to participate.
So this is a good way for the citizens to do their citizen duty and become knowledgeable about what's going on with the city budget process.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
and
now
then,
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to do the same thing. Then I'd like Mark to talk a little bit about, and Mark is our go-to person in city government for interpreting the governor's proclamations, helping us sort of weed through what these proclamations are telling us to do. He advises the police department on their ability to enforce these things. And Mark is always the one who's reading up and has the latest and greatest, so I was hoping he would help share his information today.
All right. Very good, Mark. You've got 5 or 6 minutes to fill us in, so it's your floor.
Okay.
Your mic.
Okay. Thanks. Good morning. There hasn't been anything really new in the last month or so. The governor, maybe 3 weeks, the governor had extended her proclamations. She issued her first proclamation back in March, and then she's been reissuing them every 30 days, just extending them. And so her proclamation is still in effect through mid-November, and I expect she will extend it another 30 days after that. So, there's no statewide mask mandate. The governor's made it pretty clear that she's not going to do that. I think there are many people out there that would like to see her change her mind on that, but I don't anticipate that happening, but who knows? Certainly the numbers are climbing in Iowa right now. So, it's just some basic rules and regulations. The bars and restaurants have to have a seat for every customer and keep groups of people 6 feet apart. I will say that, from the checks that have been done by our police department and state officials, that it's certainly looking like the bars and Ames and the restaurants are complying with the governor's proclamation. So that's very good news. And we do have the mask mandate that the City Council of Ames passed that mandates wearing face masks when you're out in public and you can't socially distance. And I think we've seen really good compliance with that, just anecdotally seeing people in grocery stores. I've noticed a lot more people wearing the masks since that passed. And so I think that has been helpful. Story County has now passed a mask ordinance as well. The Story County ordinance does not apply in the City of Ames since we have our own ordinance, but the rest of the county now has a mask mandate.
Very good. So if I'll throw this question out to the two of you. You may both have a slightly different answer, but how is Ames doing with the COVID-19 spike? Do either of you know?
Well, just from reports I've heard we have a team internally, a couple different teams that work on different aspects of COVID response. Even though the numbers have gone up in Story County, they have not gone up to the extent that they have statewide.
Okay.
So when you compare those two numbers, we're actually doing better than the state as a whole. Susan, I don't know if you had anything you wanted to add on that.
Well, I think just in our discussion, Mark, yesterday about it, this is not unexpected. It's a rolling average. We know that there'll be spikes and valleys. We are not experiencing, as Steve Sullivan, I know he was your guest earlier, our healthcare systems are able to keep up and handle it. The whole philosophy of crushing the curve or flattening the curve is all about being able to handle the number of cases that your community has. We're there. We can handle it. We need to practice the four pillars of healthy behavior to make sure that we're not overwhelmed. And from the meeting that Mark and I were in yesterday, it seems like people are prepared for these spikes. They want to flatten them when they can. It sounds like it's kind of going to be like a roller coaster for the next couple of months. We're going to go up and down and up and down. And it's the point, our whole goal is not to overwhelm. And so it's not a cause for panic. We're okay, but we need to continue to do the hand washing, mask wearing, stay home if you're ill, and physically distance. Those things are working, and we need to keep practicing them. And when we stop and let our guard down, we're going to see those spikes.
Very wise words. Thank you, Susan. For our listeners, if you have just joined us, we have been speaking with Mark Lambert, attorney for the City of Ames, and Susan Guiasta. And do you folks have any last words or any other announcements?
I would just say go vote today, and if you haven't already, and wear your face coverings when you're out in public.
Very good advice.
Yeah. If I could just add, Mark, we get a few comments and pushbacks about the fact that our mask mandate does not have penalties, but that doesn't mean it's not a law. And if you could just remind people.
Yes. It is the law, and people are expected to follow the law. There are a lot of laws out there that aren't enforced. If you pull up to a stop sign and you look around and you don't see a police car and you run through the stoplight sign, you've still committed a crime, okay?
You've still broken a law.
Right, exactly, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, we expect people to follow the law.
Okay. Thank you both. Thanks, Mark Lambert and Susan Guiasta, both from the City of Ames. And now, the drum roll, please. Anna, KHOI's top good news banana, is joining us.
Thank you so much. Yep, it's Tune In Tuesday, and I know that we'll all be tuning in to Election Day activities and results. So in this spirit, Meredith Frankham, a fan and friend of KHOI, sent this heart-to-heart message. Election Promises by Mark Bellantini. I hear the polls are going to be open on Tuesday. All day. Good. I certainly intend to go to them. I certainly invite you to go them and vote too. But today I say the polls are not just open on Tuesday. I say they're open every day, every hour, even here, even now. Right now I'm going to vote for the robins, the egg sky, the vanilla clouds, the purple shadows spreading under the ginkgo tree. I'm going to vote for tulips and redbuds. I am going to vote for love that does not have to run into someone else's circles in order to be love. I'm going to vote the homeless into homes. I'm going to vote the uneducated into classrooms that teach them in the way that they learn best, not the way that would be most convenient. I'm going to vote the sick into healing. I'm going to vote the lost into belonging. I'm going to vote right now for the right to dream of a world where the word politics doesn't stop me in my tracks and where the word honor still has a few good meanings left. I'm going to vote right now for the power of free people to actually be free, no matter who they are, no matter who has abandoned them, no matter who hates them. I'm going to vote for love. I'm going to vote for truthfulness as a norm, not the exception. I'm going to vote for a world that doesn't vote for killing, control, and swagger. I'm going to vote for you. I'm going to vote for me right now, right here, silently, but for real. So thank you so much for Meredith for that one. And also, I used to work for an organization called Kids Voting. And so I had a friend send this to me on Election Day. So the title of this heart-to-heart message is, Explain Like I'm Five, How to Talk to Your Children About Voting. And this is by Sawyer, an author named Sawyer. So with national elections around the corner, actually today, voting season is very much in full swing. As you exercise one of your most important rights as a citizen, you may find yourself in a position where you'll want to explain the process to your children. But wait, it's pretty confusing to explain. Representative democracy? What is voting? How do elections even work? What are we even voting on? Did I leave the bathroom light on? Oh, wait, got sidetracked at the end there. Well, you get the idea. So as we begin to talk to our little ones, we've been wondering the best way to explain these processes. The goal is to take these deceptively complicated concepts and package them in a format that's understandable for your child. So for each section, we'll start with a simple explanation, then move on to a short exercise you can do with your little ones. We suggest you practice with stuffed animals, Legos, or any child you have, your child has a lot of. So this is what we can do on Election Day. Explain to them, what is government? A government is a small group of people that create rules to keep a larger group of people safe and happy. Now practice. Imagine that of the 20 stuffed animals you have, 3 of them make the rules for everyone. The 3 stuffed animals look out for the rest of the animals, making rules to keep everyone happy and organized. They're the leaders of all the stuffed animals. So what is a democracy? Explain to them, your children, a democracy is when a group of people are led by an individual that the people choose to put there. Therefore, a democracy is a government run by the people. Every person has a say in how the government is run. This means their classmates, their teachers, and anyone they can see around them all possess a right to have their voices heard. So now when you practice this, the one stuffed animal that makes the rules is in power because of the rest of them decided that they should represent them. Pretend that there is only one rulemaker position available and 3 of the stuffed animals want the job. This means that all the stuffed animals must decide together who the one leader will be. And this leads us to our next topic of voting. What is voting? We can explain that voting is how a democracy works. Individual people vote for the person they want representing them and rules they don't want or do want. You call the people that we vote for candidates. If more people agree on who or what they want, that is called a majority. So now you can practice it. To decide which stuffed animals gets the job, all 20 of the animals must put it to a vote. The great thing about democracy is that everyone is entitled to a vote. So if you have 20 stuffed animals, each one has one vote. Of the three animals that want to be the leaders, only one will be able to get the job. Of the three stuffed animals, we need to find out which one of them will get the most votes. And that's when we have an election. So what is an election? Explain to them that voting doesn't happen all the time. An election is an event where everyone votes for the people and rules they want. With most elections, the person or cause that receives the most votes wins. Typically, on election days, you go to cast your vote at places like libraries, schools, and other community centers like we heard in Local Talk. So now practice. It's election day. All the stuffed animals are going to submit a vote one at a time at their local community center, also known as the living room. Only 18 of the animals decide to vote, though. Two of the animals didn't feel like voting. Because two of the animals didn't vote, they didn't get to say in which animal is elected. Once each animal has submitted their vote, you count up the results. And yes, you're allowed to vote for yourself. The results are in. Of the three animal candidates running, candidate one received 6 votes, candidate two received 8 votes, candidate three received 4 votes. Because candidate two received the most votes, they win the election. There are 2 important things to break down here for your children. One, sometimes what you vote for doesn't get selected or win the election. And at the end of the day, that's one of the cornerstones of democracy. It's important to drive home to the point to your kids that if you want what you vote for, if what you vote for doesn't win, they shouldn't be discouraged by the process. As we saw with the two animals that decided not to take part of the election, when you don't vote, you give up your chance to be heard. Whenever you have the opportunity to vote, it should be exercised. Even if you don't win or get what you want with each election, there's always a better chance for your voice to be heard when you participate in the democratic process. So thank you so much for my kids voting colleague who sent that to me as we discover what it means to be an American citizen in a democracy on election day. So it is Tune In Tuesday, but you will not be able to tune in to heart messages as you'll be listening to election results on KHOI. But you can listen on the Donna Lana Show today because it will be all about chestnuts, and Donna talks us through a chocolate souffle, which sounds wonderful. And then Mike Metz, Science Bites for this afternoon, you'll be discussing a mishmash of astronomy news, some new ways of analysis with samples and data by comparison to past instrumentation and built-in redundancy, COVID-19 pandemic update, greenhouse gas updates regarding global climate change. I just sound smarter saying that. So back to you, Mike.
Thank you, Anna. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Remember, you can hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. This program is engineered by Mike Murphy. Thank you again, Michael. And produced by Lynn Carey and Ursula Rudenberg. I have been your host, Mike Metz. Thank you, Anna. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You also heard Neil Diamond's America, Buffy Marie Saint's Spirit of the Wind, and Thus Spoke Zarathustra. That's a Richard Strauss, and it was performed by the Berlin Philharmonic. KHOI will begin providing 2 updates per hour on election starting this evening at 6:15 p.m. and again at 6:45, 7:15, and 7:45. Then, at 8 p.m., we will begin airing continuous national coverage of the election until at least 11 p.m. this evening. Remember, voting is a privilege, and it is your responsibility as a citizen of our United States. Also, whatever today's outcome, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Always be kind and respect one another. And remember to wear your mask, wash your hands, and keep a safe physical distance. Only you can prevent COVID-19 viral spread. Thank you for listening, and Anna, we'll see you again on the radio.
Convicted of a felony? Would you like to vote in Iowa? Now you probably can. On August 5th, the law in Iowa changed. That means most Iowans convicted of a felony can now vote as long as you've discharged your sentence, including probation, parole, supervised release, and special sentence. Find out more at youcanvoteiowa.org. That's youcanvoteiowa.org.